Well, when I began to get to know the ghost a little, I began to feel sort of sorry for him, and so I said, "Well, we can't bury you because we don't have any of you. Those things were all just pretend, you know, the clam and the beef liver and my tonsils. But we could put your boat somewhere where it wouldn't float anymore. I know of a nice place where you'd like to be. It's got lots of flowers, and it's called Heaven's Annex, and that's almost like being buried with heaven and all." And the ghost thought he'd like that. So I asked the Heaven's Annex lady, but she said no, her yard was too full already for a whole boat. And why didn't we put it in front of our cottage, where there was lots of room and no flowers at all, just an ugly burned place? And I said that I had an especial reason for wanting Heaven's Annex. And she said that any spot on earth could be a Heaven's Annex. It depended on the spirits of the people living there, and whether they were nice to each other and loved each other, and all that sort of stuff.
The author of those thoughts about a certain kind of heaven was Jacqueline Jackson. But it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University brings you Reading and Writing and Radio, a program on the process of writing creatively, conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. To conduct today's program, here's Ken Ost.
Well, here we go again, Mrs. Jackson. The name of this program is Flip Flop, She Flied, and I've been trying to figure out what this really means, but I give up. You'll have to tell me.
A little while ago, we talked about hell and hellish societies, and I started that program by singing a ballad about a villain who went down to O.O. and frizzled and fried.
That's right.
But his pure sweetheart, the verse about after her death is that she went up to heaven and flip-flop she flied.
Kind of a sloppy job of flying, was it?
I guess so. You sort of see her as a crow up there. Crows keep their wings going pretty flip-floppy. But here you see is a stereotype of heaven, just like he went down to O.O. and frizzled and fried is a stereotype of hell. And all the cartoons, hardly a week goes by in the Sunday newspapers that there isn't some cartoon of some man standing on a cloud in a nightshirt holding his harp and making some comments about heaven to somebody else also standing on the cloud. And this sort of heaven seems an awfully dull place. Heaven, as a matter of fact, or a place for people to go after death, has just as long a history in literature as the abodes of the damned, of hell does. And yet, heaven seems lots duller. The Elysian fields of the Greek mythology, you get sort of eternal bliss going on, but they don't much say what the eternal bliss is, whereas when you get over into Hades, into hell, you get Tantalus forever reaching for the fruits and things that he wants and never being able to reach them, and Sisyphus forever having to push a stone uphill, and just when he gets it to the top, why, it comes rolling down. But we don't get all these vivid details about this place of eternal happiness.
On the program about hell, you mentioned that this more or less was set down by some of the great writers of the, well, seven centuries ago, Milton and
Dante.
How about heaven? Did this develop the same
yes,
way, more or less?
Yes, Dante went right on to purgatory and then to paradise in his visit to the life after death. And I didn't find the Doré illustrations of heaven nearly as interesting as the horrors of hell, that the people seem to be being swept around on great clouds in blissful groups. And the same with Milton. I read Paradise Lost in college, and certainly hell was much more vividly written of, and there didn't seem to be much to do in heaven. Everyone was sort of sitting around, and once in a while the Lord would speak, and there were descriptions of ineffable light and so forth. You get the idea that hell is a much more desirable place, but this is really a literary fallacy. If it's perhaps more interesting to read about. And it also shows our limitations in being able to describe a really blissful society.
Mm-hmm.
When we get trying to describe what is absolute bliss, our imaginations fail, it seems, so that heaven doesn't really seem like a very desirable place to be. The most of the heavens I've read about, and I'd be bored silly in about 36 hours.
Well, at the same time, hell qualifies, as some cities do, an interesting place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah, this would probably be a good description. And I think if we could really describe heaven properly, that this would be a place that we would want to live, but it's our human failure to be able to imagine perfection.
What other authors have tackled the heavenly description?
Well, there's some very fine children's books that have descriptions of heaven in them. There's an old book by George MacDonald written before the turn of the century called At the Back of the North Wind, and the land behind the north wind is somehow mystically heaven, land after death. The book never actually says it, but you get the sense that it's in a sense sort of the eye of the storm, the calm and peaceful country where the raging of other things goes on around it, and finally little Diamond dies and ends up in this land at the back of the north wind that might be heaven. Then there's a book called The Bluebird by Maeterlinck, which is also a very old book, and it should be read, but I think that it might turn some kids off because the author has a chummy style and refers to, you know, little reader and points out her moral, or his, the wife, the copy I have, the wife has rewritten The Bluebird for children. But the story there is of two children who go in search of the bluebird, which is the symbol for happiness. And they go to various lands. Most of them have some sort of heavenly or hellish quality. They go to the land of the future, where all the babies are waiting to be born, and they go to the land of memory, where their grandparents are. And finally, they return back home again, and here, you see, is where the moral of the story is, that Tyltyl's gray dove that he has scorned, or he has loved, but has not been the bluebird, when he gets home, this bird looks blue to him. And it's the idea that you can search the whole world over for happiness, and you've had it all the time. And here he gets back to his humble little cottage, and his bird is blue. And so here, you see, is a book that has all sorts of images of various sorts of heavens.
Another word occurs to me now. I don't know if this relates to afterlife any more than it does to life on Earth, the perfect life on Earth. I'm not sure. And this is the word utopia. One hears this as the perfect situation.
Utopian writing is about societies that never were or never will be, but that might be, and they could be here on Earth. Utopia, the word itself, comes from a Greek word meaning no place, and there's a famous utopia written a couple of centuries ago called Erewhon. And when you write that down and look at it, it means nowhere. It's nowhere backward.
Mm-hmm.
So that when writers have written about the ideal society, the perfect society, it's almost assumed that this isn't achievable in our human existence, that there are going to be flaws and difficulties and anything in anything that we create. But that doesn't keep us from thinking about what would be the perfect society, the ideal society.
Getting down to present company, you are a writer, and B, you have your definite ideas, I'm sure you as well as the others, about utopia or heaven, if you will. What are they? I'm curious.
When we were kids, we went up to a little lake in southern Wisconsin, and that little lake was heaven to me. In the wintertime, if I were unhappy or sick or for some reason couldn't go to sleep, I would put the images of Pleasant Lake into my mind. And we lived for the day school got out because we knew the next day we would go on up and spend the summer months on this lovely little lake. And I was so happy there that I'm sure this was the reason why I wrote The Pale-Faced Redskins and The Ghost Boat, because these are reflections of that blissful state. And looking over these books, I realized that both of them have quite a bit of this. I think the whole story gives this feel that it was a really happy time, even though there were some difficult times. Why don't you read the endings of, or close to the endings of both books? And these describe pretty much my perfect society, my happy society where I was the most content, say, at age 9 and 10.
Here's the ending, the very end of Paleface Redskins. And below, she was moving across a sea of peace in a world of silver. The sparkling bubbles rushing from her fingers were the her of a moment ago, and what she would be in a minute were diamonds coming to meet her. And she was all contained in one sea of silver, lapping at every tiny inlet around the dark shore, the same and yet dancing, dancing, every second different. And underneath was the black, still water, the understanding and the deep content. And this next passage is from almost the end, the very end of Ghost Boat. She leaned up on her elbow and looked out over the porch rail. Below, she could see the dim shape of the ghost boat in the moonlight. Her tooth on a string swayed gently in the night breeze. Mittens kneaded the sheet at the foot of her bed, and she felt, rather than heard, the vibrations of her purring. Under Thad's bed, Jip thumped the floor with a drowsy tail, and on the sill, Thad's turtle scrabbled in its pan. On the shore, the waves lap-lapped. In the woods, the crickets pulsed. Back in the dumb waiter, Thad's tonsils sat, pickled in their bottle. The boat clunked against the dock. The chain creaked. She didn't think there were any ghosts around.
It's sort of the idea, you know, God's in his heaven and all's right with the world. You hear this for many summers, and they've had some adventures this summer, but they're sitting back in the dumb waiter now.
Is this a point? I hear you have so many details, so many things happening or could happen in your idea of heaven or utopia. And you were mentioning earlier that heaven, the usual stereotype, seems so dull, but there are no details. We never know what's happening. Is that possibly the point?
I think that if we would put in the details, and that they are the homely, happy details, the boat chain creaking and the crickets pulsing, this is why I would find utopias, what I would like, or what is the most contented spot to me, more interesting than trying to think up heaven, unless we were to detail heaven in that same way. I think it is these little sorts of details that make a thing vivid and happy.
With that in mind, writing about utopia or heaven, I'm not sure which word to use here, we can work in lots of these ideas, the details, but the way they should be as far as we're concerned.
There's a series of books that I loved as a kid, and they're really not very good books, the Maida books. Maida's Little Shop and Maida's Little House and Maida's Little School. She's a little rich girl.
I see.
But I was particularly fascinated with the book Maida's Little School. And here you see is a real utopian book, even though I didn't know the word at that time or what it meant. Maida and her friends gather in the country estate of the rich father, and they're going to be going to school. And they talk about going to school, but somehow they never seem to get around to going to school. The whole thing is play, and they have some interesting people that come to stay with them, and one of the people that comes that they dearly love can only speak French, and they have to learn French in order to talk to him, and another person that they enjoy very much knows a lot about nature, and they're always out in the land and in the woods doing things, and it's only till close to the end of the book that the characters in the story, and the reader of the book has probably wised up a little sooner, discovers that they've been going to school all along. The other day, I brought a group of Welsh school kids from Rockford up here to Madison, and we visited the station and saw the way things worked and listened in on a broadcast, and we went to some of the museums and we ate our lunch out by the Union. And one of the boys at one point said, "Gee, I'm so glad we're here. The other kids are in school." And I said to him, I said, you're in school. He says, no, I'm not in school. And I said, you're lucky to go to a school that doesn't believe that a school is contained in four walls. And this boy was sort of amazed. Mm-hmm. But it's the same sort of school as this Maida's little school, which is an ideal school. And I would love to see papers, stories that Wisconsin school kids might write on, say, if I could change things about school, what to you is the ideal school? Where would you like to be? Mm. How would you like to conduct it? Who would be the people that would be there? You don't have to start with any preconceived notions. You don't have to figure that here is a classroom. Let's throw out everything and start over again. What is a school for? Mm. We'd even start with that idea. Maybe is a school necessary? But these utopian papers, and they wouldn't, I talk about utopia being unattainable, but it seems to me that something like an ideal school, or one that's much more ideal than most of us went to when we were young, or that most of the students are going to now, this whole idea, for instance, of being crammed into a box for so many hours of a day, these things aren't absolutes. We don't have to stay in this sort of idea the rest of our school lives, for instance, and some schools and some people planning schools are beginning to recognize this. But I would like to see most, I think, the points of view of what we could do, what our ideas are right now about our street, for instance, or our country, our environment, our school. I'm particularly interested in school, because I think that adults haven't thought enough about what would make school a happy place for kids.
Okay, Jackie. As for you young authors, we hope that you dream up some interesting utopian and or heavenly ideas, and we hope you let us know about them, okay?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has brought you reading and writing and radio. Even though Jacqueline Jackson is talking about Madison and Wisconsin school children, she means you this time. All you Illinois classrooms near Springfield who listen to reading and writing and radio. We'd like to hear your ideas on what makes a perfect home, or perfect school, or perfect country. It can be an imaginary land, too. So send in your ideas to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.